do it to the best of my ability, because if I fail, that means I fail for my entire female nation, I call it.
Is that possible? That was the question for myself. And it is absolutely possible.
Good evening, America. Good middle of the day, Australia, and welcome to everyone listening across the planet. This is your host, Tony Londis, and this is the Everyday Business Show. Now, quick reminder, if you're listening in live on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitch, and Twitter, the lovely Peo in the Philippines is ready and waiting to take your questions, comments, and provide you with links live on the show. If you want to watch this show or others like it, please jump on to Binge Networks TV, where you'll find the Tony TV channel, and also on any smart TV across the planet, you will find access to the Tony TV channel as well, and you can catch up on anything from these shows and more by jumping on to tonylontis.com, clicking on the guest, and you will find everything about our guests. But we're going to talk about that all a little bit later. Now, we've been doing this wonderful Welcome to Country each year because it's an important part of Australia's recognition of the Indigenous communities across the planet, and particularly in the development of Australia's culture. I want to respectfully acknowledge the people of the Yugambeh language region, the traditional owners of the land in which we meet and broadcast, and pay my respect to the elders past and present, and all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples here today and who are likely to be listening online. Now, our guest today is the gorgeous Kate Osborne from Coco Matrix. And Kate is a powerful businesswoman, and I can't wait to introduce you to her today. But here's what you need to know before I do that. At the age of 27, Kate was poached from Flight Center to the world's largest business coaching company. There, she was one of only two women earning a professional income. Kate recognized that if she wanted to be a full-time mum on a full-time income, she needed to own a business. And this is where Coco Matrix started. The origins were from the University of Queensland psychology graduate and founder, Kate Osborne herself. And over the past decade, legal, marketing, finance, sales, HR, production and distribution specialists dug deep and collaboratively developed the hard questions needed to carefully address over 360 key business parameters within each of the primary 64 overlapping operational sectors of a business and put it all into an 8x8 matrix. This matrix, the Coco Matrix, has become one of the core foundations of Coco Matrix Quality Assurance Framework. The Coco Matrix Quality Assurance Framework ensures that you answer all these carefully crafted questions and they are identified, recorded, and addressed efficiently and effectively by your highly trained leadership managers. The Coco Matrix creates successful, compassionate leaders and resilient organizations. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thank you, Tony. It sounds so different when you explain it. Interesting. I've never heard it explained like that. You need to come on the road and sell this for me, obviously.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I think that, you know, to me, the practical, I've just jumped off a call with a group of business leaders that are growing at 300%. Now, whilst they're growing at such a quick rate, they've had to dilute equity quickly. So I guess the easiest explanation of Coco Matrix is, you know, what the hell do we do next, Kate? Right. And so our sessions that we have in terms of leadership is, well, what's the next question that we should be answering to continue the growth, but to bring on the right leaders at the right pace at the right time. And that's what Cocoa Matrix does. It eliminates conflict at that high-end collaborative space.
And I have to say that I have known Kate for a while and been exposed to Cocoa Matrix a little bit. And the bit that I've seen is incredibly powerful. And I know that after we get off air, I have another conversation to have with Kate around this idea of rapidly growing business. But back to Kate. Now, Kate, you worked in the Flight Centre environment. Can you tell the audience about that?
Yeah, so I had my degree at the University of Queensland and went off travelling. And when I got home, I went back to UQ and just said, look, this has been my experience. I've been to 36 countries. I've had a sales background in retail management. And immediately she said, go straight to Flight Centre. You know, the founder is looking for people to put on a fast-track entrepreneurial program. So they had literally just gone back to the university to say, any alumni that you have, we need them. We need these strong leaders. So that was in 1995. I was employed immediately, and you had to hit certain metrics to be considered on the program. And the metrics were very challenging. So one of jumping over these hoops was really critical. And there was a lot of females. There was a lot of non-binary individuals in that environment.
Awesome.
So that was just a fun playground to learn. And that's, you know, my first impression of Flight Centre was sky's the limit. We are all on one team. We're all collaborating for the greater purpose. And so that was my induction into a business environment, which was a healthy induction.
Absolutely. And you loved it in Flight Centre, but what was the catalyst that saw the shift from Flight Centre to having your own company and business?
Yeah, well, you know, as many people will remember, the Twin Towers collapsing was a major event in our industry. So I had majority of my vision for my life was to work in the travel industry. At that stage, we had a $7 million turnover business with a team of nine. And overnight, we recognised that, you know, with the terrorist activity that had happened, America, then we had 32 airlines collapse under the pressure. And then for those that don't remember, we had SARS, which was a precursor to COVID. Mm. And so I had a client, which was a corporate client that were traveling around the world every 6 weeks, expanding their leadership and development coaching business. And the CFO, so the chief financial officer, said, look, we can see female founders as the next leadership frontier. We cannot attract females into our company. They had over 600 men. They had one woman in Canada and one in New Zealand earning a professional income. And, you know, it was an interesting conversation, and it was probably the only time my mind had been open. In my entire career, he essentially sat in front of me and said, you write your own contract and I will pay it. And I had this opportunity to really look at what did I want. What, you know, as a lot of women will know, you know, we've got to squeeze a lot into life. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I had always wanted to be a mother at 30. And here I was having this thought at 27, I'm too old to learn anything new. And I can remember him saying, you know, Kate, this is a new frontier. And I thought, oh, you know what, wrong girl. I've already put 5 years into this industry. It's all I know. And that's when it sort of hit me is, well, you know, other people must be feeling the same way. This disruption on the planet, what if I could really embrace it? I went and spoke to Screw Turner, who is the founder of Flight Centre. He said, Kate, what's the worst that can happen? Give it 12 months. If it doesn't work out, just come back. And so he really gave me permission, this strong masculine leader that looked me in the eye and said, geez, it sounds like too good to be true. You know, what's the worst that can happen? So I wrote my own contract. I was brought on as a share owner in a global company, and I ended up buying them out, and I had my own territory within just on 18 months. We had 90 clients, a team of 11 coaches, and we'd locked out Southeast Queensland as our as our territory, and I was the third most profitable franchisee in that organisation as a global trainer. I was training more people and really helping women to bring the heart centre and culture into business. And that was my superpower, bringing the psychology, the flight centre background into business and helping educate men on how powerful culture can be.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that portion of work in the coaching and business development, did that lead to Coco Matrix? Was that the start?
It was interesting. I was always an innovator. If there was a problem, I was like a dog with a bone to find a solution. And so in that organisation, because there wasn't a lot of constraint, they were a very innovative group. They just let me do whatever I wanted, Tony. Like if Kate says, fill in a survey, just fill in the survey, just do what she says. And I had access to 10,000 businesses across 6 different countries. So we could measure culturally trends. We could solve problems internationally for business coaches. And, I was very shocked and surprised that when I went into labour with my first child, they cut all my franchise agreements. So that was the birth of Coco Matrix. Now, KO stands for Kent Osborne and Kate Osborne. So Coco, KOKO, was stemmed. That's the first time my husband and I had real tension. So prior to that, I'd been making lots of money, lots of commissions at Flight Centre. We travelled all around the world, been to 51 countries. You know, life was great. When I joined the business coaching community, we were doing more travel at a 5-star level. Life was fabulous. Here I was, new baby, saying, I beg your pardon, you mean your $10 million business is now worth not $10 million? And it was the first time that, you know, all of us have had our backs to the wall, and you wouldn't be in business if you weren't resilient, right? Mm. So resiliency was a really important thing. But my bugbear was that I did not see that coming. I didn't have any inclination to be sceptical that I wouldn't be nurtured and looked after during that vulnerable time in a woman's life. You can imagine at that stage it was 1,300 franchisees, you know, over 80% of them were male. And I felt that they were saying, what's little Miss Optimism going to do now? Like I really had this egoic, you know, like they were out to get me. Why did this happen? And it forced me to say, you know what, I need legal advice. And so I sought a mentor in the legal space, and it transformed my thinking.
Yeah.
And that's the birthing of Coco Matrix was, you know what, never ever react to a situation. You need to be on the front foot, and it is what it is, Kate. Like, this is done. Your team are now in competition against you in the same market. So now you need to, you know, actually weigh up what is yours and what is theirs. And, you know, if professional mediation is what you need to go through, then it doesn't matter that you've just given birth and you don't know how to breastfeed. Mediation it is. That's the highest priority. And that's what happened to me. So, yeah, within 6 weeks of giving birth to my daughter, I was in professional mediation, trying to secure enough cash flow just to trade through. And my husband confronted me with the reality, which was we wanted a large family. And he said, whilst you have debt, there will be no more babies.
Oh, Kate.
So, you know, every now and again we get one thing crumble, but then the dream.
Lots of things.
The dream is challenged, and that was unacceptable to me. I just thought, are you kidding? Like, I did nothing wrong here. So we took him out of the workforce. My husband was a full-time dad, and I worked and worked and worked, and I paid out every single person. And I got pregnant, and Joshua is 16 months younger than his sister, Michaela.
Wow.
So, you know, you've got to...
Phenomenal.
Like, to me... You know, Coco Matrix was, I sought the right mentor, I had the right question to ask, I went into mediation alone, vulnerable, and I just shared my facts and I secured that cash flow. By the time we sold that business for a 3x multiple.
Good.
you know, it ended up, now in hindsight, I can say that happened for me, not to me, because just yeah. around the corner was the largest GFC the planet had ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to report those coaches, the majority of them, not only did they fail in business, a couple of them had to declare bankruptcy because without my support, they couldn't cope. And so, you know, sometimes we just have to just play it out
long.
Let
go.
You know, yeah. play it out long enough. I didn't know why it was happening, but when it happened, I didn't have time to think. I needed the question in the right sequence to look at how I could, A, protect my assets and, B, protect my heart because that was worth protecting. If you're going to have a culture in business, then you have to be out there and share your stories vulnerably. Mm. And I built enough support that, upon sale, I could move my family to the Gold Coast, which for those of you that don't know, for me is heaven on earth.
It's a great place to live.
Yeah, and my break even was 90 minutes work per week. So I had to work an hour and a half a week to break even. I owned everything cash outright in my company because they cut those agreements. And I, you know, I couldn't see it at the time, but the benefit was the birthing of Coco Matrix and the ability to just teach other people that in times of trouble you need strong leadership and clear guidance.
Mm.
And that's where that was born from.
So out of that time, Kate, when, as a mother, I cannot quite get my head around being in a legal mediation situation with a newborn that is, you're my hero in that space. And I'm wondering at what time that thought bubble came about the Matrix, because this is a very innovative, creative piece of intellectual property that is incredibly valuable for all stages of business. Mm. So was it a blip and then it's just...
No, not at all. It was a full collaborative process. So right from that lawyer coming on board, I said, okay, I will have you by my side in every transaction for life. And I've honoured that. He has been with me the whole time. They started because they could see the benefit of the work I was doing. They were hosting some lunches and they had me bring my clients into the law firm. Mm-hmm. And so we identified three businesses that were scalable very obviously, but we didn't know, you know, how to avoid these pitfalls. Now, one mm-hmm. gentleman was getting close to retirement age and he had an incredible intellectual property for reverse osmosis for water. Now,
Australia, yes.
water is an incredible asset and we knew that his business would be worth a lot of money if we could close and finish that business. The second mm-hmm. one was Entrepreneur of the Year with Telstra, mm-hmm. one of the largest award winners, Jelaine D. She had a product.
Yes.
She just secured contract with 90 Nordstrom stores in the US and she was supplying a product that was developed in China. So it got shipped from China straight to the US and she did not own that intellectual property. So we knew there would be some issues with that company as it scaled. And the third one was a young couple that very dear to my heart, Studio Pilates, and Jade and Tanya. Jade's an Olympic swimmer. Tanya was a physio. And they helped me to get pregnant in that my doctors had said, unless you get your body fit, Kate, you can't get pregnant again. And so I've been visiting Tanya every, you know, three times a week so that my body could have three, four pregnancies. And I love their product so much. I just was so invested and we wanted to scale their business. And using Coco Matrix, they've now got a vision for 2,000 locations. There's currently at 65 locations around three different continents. So, you know, we bought the clients together. I charged them a retainer and that enabled me to get the best talent. So I could go out and source, you know, the best product specialists and the best controllers and the best, you know, HR culture people. And so we did an 8-week series where they presented the questions and it was actually our product specialist at the end of it. He sent me an email. He said, imagine if you put the questions all together. So it was his idea. his idea. And he was an employee at the time. He didn't own his own business. And it just sparked, no one's ever done that before. What would that look like? And so over the next 2 years, we kept tweaking and tweaking of how we could create it. And it has physically ended up as a board.
Yes.
Tiny bit. It's a physical.
I know. I love it. It's a physical board with amazing prompting questions.
Yeah.
Just like that.
That's it. So we take this board in, we stick it in front of the founder and their team. And we basically say to their team, if there was one problem right here, right
where
now, solving, where would it be? And we put the post-it notes on the board and it just exactly highlights the problem for the leader. So it's that collaboration that, you know, that's where it got sparked from. It was sparked from real solutions in the real world, and they've just valued it at $2 million, the IP.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And the way that it actually helps businesses, and it doesn't, it's not necessarily about small or big businesses. It's about finding solutions for whatever it is within that business that's not going right. So like the example you use, Kate, around scalability. If a business is in a certain spot and they have an inkling that this might be scalable, then Coco Matrix can lead them in the direction to do that with pointers, I guess, is the best way to describe it from my perspective.
Pointers is one way, but I think of a traffic light system. Like, to me, it was like legal red light, Kate. You are not a lawyer. You're not trained to think like a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And so anything that crops up in the legal column, I'm incompetent. I'm also dispassionate and proud of it. Like, I'm not passionate about reading law every night, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing when it comes to, you know, maybe finance, that I see a lot of entrepreneurs who don't know their numbers and they're not willing to have the hard conversations around their break-evens and their numbers, but they're excellent at product and selling and connecting and culture and delivering. Well, great. So it's pretty cheap to outsource a lawyer and an accountant. It's really not that difficult. So it's more like a traffic light. Now, ultimately, we want to get green lights across 8 of them, right? We want to be generalists across business.
Uh-huh.
And in order to be a generalist, you know, it means you've got to sit and take counsel from your lawyer, from your accountant, from your HR, and just, you know, be humble that you're not meant to know everything. But how do you have a conversation if no one's ever given you the questions?
Yes.
So that's where the beauty of it is. It's you don't have to know everything, but you do need to be aware that you don't know what you don't know.
Correct.
Had I asked some questions smarter, I think I would have avoided some of the pitfalls that I had, you know, in my life experience. And so my joy is going in and helping others avoid those same pitfalls that I fell in.
Kate, it's a very collaborative process using Coco Matrix. What are the key, why is collaboration so important? And I have to say that from a woman's perspective, women in business, collaboration can be extraordinarily powerful. So from your perspective, Kate, what are some of the keys to collaboration?
Yeah, look, I think I see it as a mountaintop, right? We all want to collaborate. Wouldn't it be great if you're Mother Teresa and you're building a legacy and you have a community of people that you are going to serve in your life and then leave an influence like she did so well that spurs on other philanthropists, right? So
yes.
I think the mountaintop that we're explaining, we've always got to be clear that it's, you know, I think every entrepreneur that I meet that's a true collaborator would want to add some philanthropic activity into their week.
Absolutely. Right?
Women want this.
Love
women love to give back, because how do you prove that you've got something? You have to give it, right? Mm-hmm. So the only way you know you've got it is if you can give it. So I have time, I can give my time. Mm-hmm. If I have money, I can give my money. Now, the challenge that I see is a lot of people trying to collaborate when they're not up the mountain. They're at the bottom of a mountain and they're saying, I want to collaborate, when actually what they need is they need to take.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we go in and we actually are asked to educate people on collaboration, what I have to first educate them in is, do they even know what collaboration feels like?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of people in teams. I was brought in for the Director General for the launch of the Commonwealth Games, which is a big sporting event in between the Olympics for all of the Commonwealth. And only 20% of the audience knew what collaboration was defined.
Mm.
Now, we're asking them, state, federal, to collaborate in a local event, and none of them had a definition of collaboration. So
wow.
What I recognised was, first things first, we're not at the mountaintop. We're actually at the tit for tat, like, I need this report, you need to pay me, and I need a deadline. So what I've done is I've created its 10 keys to collaboration, starting from the base of the mountain, which I think the most important aspect of collaboration is your own self-image. Right? I'm a natural collaborator, and what I've learned over time is not everybody is a natural collaborator. So if they can't collaborate, we need to force people to cooperate.
Ah.
And so what I would do is I would build people into teams and have peer-to-peer accountability, that you can't get your points unless your entire pod cooperate. And so then what we recognize is, let's say, for example, someone says, well, good-hearted, I'm going to achieve something, but their self-image limits them in being able to deliver. Mm-hmm. Their pod has to come in and give over the information for them to cross the line. So I think, you know, some of the keys are, you need to look at the people you're trying to collaborate with and assess their self-image. Now,
okay.
A big self-image as an example would be, I'm just a mum. Okay, so we've got, an opportunity. I was the head of my school PNF, right? So president of the PNF. We would run these big events, so 1,200 people coming to a show that, you know, all the kids were presenting in. You'd put a committee there, and then people wouldn't show up because, well, I'm a mum and I'm not getting paid and this is just a volunteer position, okay? So yes. You have to understand, if you're working with volunteers, their self-image is different than if you're working with paid professionals.
Mm.
And from a collaboration point of view, you've got to define your team and what's going to mean success for that. If it's a fate, well, success for the fate is we get 1,200 people here, they have something to eat, something to drink.
Drink and some entertainment and watch the kids.
It's not that big a deal. Mm. You know, go out and get 7 sponsors and get the money in the bank and then make it fun, buy everything. You don't have to get people doing annoying tasks. So things like that, very practically, I started using Coco Matrix in the non-for-profit space. And building yes. communities, and so the collaboration taught me that you can build an incredible leadership team if you can define collaboration and show what it is and demonstrate what it's not and have honest communication around you know, what's possible. But they're my two keys. The first is you've got to get your self-image right, but the up yes. the mountain is true collaborators want to give back.
Yeah.
And if they're not giving back, they're probably further down the mountain in one of those 10 keys. And as we teach it, they start to recognize, I've not got my thinking right. I think I'm a collaborator, but what I'm doing is demonstrating that I'm not there yet. And that's okay. You're halfway up the mountain. That's better than at the bottom of the mountain.
Yeah.
But how can we equip our teams to collaborate? We've got to teach them what collaboration is.
Yeah. That's great, Kate, that is clarified in my mind, the differences between collaboration and that understanding that as you grow in business, you can actually start to do different levels of collaboration as you grow and scale.
Yeah.
And you don't have to keep staying at that same level. You can actually grow. Your collaborations can actually grow and get a little more complex the bigger you grow your business. Kate, you and I've had some conversations about women and leadership and about the state of women across Australia just recently. I want to talk about leadership in particular. And from your experience, what makes a good leader?
Look, I think from my experience, a good leader can balance their left brain, you know, that they have to actually do the things that they need to do legally, logistically, productively, with their right brain, which is get creative about how they're doing it and encourage others to come along the journey. when we see females moving into the extreme sort of masculine left brain kind of leadership style, they get hammered out there in the marketplace because they're not masculine. They're not going to gain the respect that they're hoping for in that direction, in that way. Alternatively, when women as leaders go too much to the right and they're too flexible and they're too victim-like and they're too scheming and begging, then they don't get the love that they're looking for from their community. So to me, it's this fine dance. And so, you know, I've got a whole series, 16 soft workshops to sort of unite the left side of the brain with the right side of the brain, and the result should be that, A, you have peace of mind.
Yes.
Right. When you go to bed at night, you lay down, you should feel, ah, like that was a great day. I added value. I achieved my to-do list. I did my exercise. I had my 8 glasses of water. I did my affirmations. You know, there's a checklist of things that I know when I've done the hard yards. Would I pay myself today? Yes. And then there's other days where I put my head on the pillow and I cry. And my husband, like, rubs my head and I'm like, it was a terrible day. Today was a terrible day. I let myself down. I'm sick in the head with feeling guilt or frustration or anger or worry. And he's there just to say, you know what, tomorrow, let it go.
Be a better day.
Yeah. So I think good leaders, you know, are authentic. Mm. Not every day is a great day.
No.
But if we can start to unite and balance that, you know, what I could have, should have, would have done, write it down, get up at 4 a.m. and power through and show up at your team meeting and say, hey, I own it. Yesterday was a challenging day. I had to face all my shadows, but here I am today. I've been up since 4. I've tackled some stuff. Let's go again.
Yeah.
And leaders can acknowledge that it's not easy. That's why, like, 1% population try it. I mean, 99% are whinging about their leaders and 1% actually try. So
trying to do it.
Yeah, we've got to unite and collaborate. The 1% of really great leaders have to work together to lift each other and reflect back that it is not easy. This is not an easy task.
Yeah. Kate, in thinking about leadership and knowing and having worked with you, there's an element of spirituality that is sprinkled through everything you do, and I know that from how I've worked with you. I really want to explore that conversation around spirituality and the feeling of a higher entity and how that relates to the conversation we're having now and how important it is for leaders, business owners, entrepreneurs, women to have a little focus on something that's outside of them.
Yeah, look, I think it's stemmed my whole childhood. I had wonderful parents with very strong foundational Christian principles, right? Mm. So I was brought up in a school where it was happy days. I went home to happy, loving parents. I have 5 brothers and sisters. We all genuinely love each other. That's quite rare. So I think it was bought from an identity that I always understood that there, you know, we are here on planet Earth. There's some curriculum we got to get through, but at the end of the day, we're a unit and we're all working for the greater good. Now, at 21, I met my very first mentor. He was the 6th shareholder in Coca-Cola and was an outright atheist. He had all the money in the world, but he had no family, no children, and he paid me, a 21-year-old, to sit by his deathbed and look after him. So, you know, that was the first time that I came across somebody who challenged me around my spirituality and my core beliefs and values. And to be honest, it was very uncomfortable. For about 7 months, he was a barrister. He was very angry. He was an alcoholic. I refused to talk about these topics until such a time that he couldn't die. He was having a real dying. And so I challenged him. I just said, look, you know, why don't you try it my way? Why, you know, I think you're missing a big piece of the puzzle. Where do you think you go? Right. And so I started as a 21-year-old, very scared, talking to a very angry 74-year-old, and discovered that his wife had died of a poisonous blood transfusion. But they had all the money in the world, and a medical issue took out the most important person in his life. Prior to that, he was in the World War. He was on the front line, and he was so scared, he pulled some strings, and he was able to move into foreign intelligence. So this is a very, very smart man. Yet, to me, I could see he was scared. He didn't have joy in his life. There was no peace of mind. There was absolutely no hope. And so that's where it sort of, to me, I just started acknowledging that, you know, this was a big piece of my puzzle, is I didn't fear death because I didn't believe I go anywhere. I just dial out a different frequency and then I can just talk to you later. So we started to really explore that. And he was like, so you believe after I die, I can talk to you? And I was like, well, I don't know that it's true, but you could test a measure for me. So, you know, we had wonderful conversations, and I said, and if I'm right, then that's a win for you and it's a win for me. So let's, and he started to shift and change. So at 75, he finally considered, okay, let's try it your way. And, you know, it's a wonderful end to that story. But I said, send me a rose when you cross over to show me that, you know, it's all good, life's great. And of course, I got that rose, and you know, he was sending me messages via other people. And so, from a very young age, I felt convicted that you know, people with faith have a easier journey when things get hard because they believe something bigger than them. Now, that was backed up with my statistics of the 10,000 businesses, and I got access to statistics. People that had some spirituality backing fared better and made more money. And so,
interesting.
I stood up on stage in front of the top 160 coaches and I told them my theory. I said, I think what's happening is we've got to have a balance between IQ, which is intellect, EQ, which is an emotional intelligence, and SQ, which is a spiritual quotient. And if we could start to blend these three, we could really create some wow results on the planet. Now, I was laughed off stage by the founder, absolutely ridiculed. But it was good for me, Tony, because when he ridiculed me, I thought, I'm going to not just, like, prove this. I'm going to focus. So for 12 months, I just worked with spiritual leaders. I only went and coached businesses that I said had a freaky path to them. And so I entered my family. I entered my husband. I said, we're following a freaky trail. I want to work with every healer, medium, astrologer, like take me down this path. And so, of course, when they cut my franchise agreements, what do you think happened? I had this community of people. And, you know, there's some really freaky things that happened in that situation. But one was my whole IT shut down because I got an email from a mystic and my IT person, no one could work. And I said, oh, I think it's this guy who's trying to email us. Like literally our whole computer system shut down as I opened his email. And I went and had a session with him. I'd never met him before. He just sent out an email. And from the minute I met him, he said, Kate, this is happening for a reason. It's going to be in your best interest. And he told me my future. And so, you know, I've always kind of understood there's things out of my control because I don't put the moon up at night and I don't make sure that the guides work. So I'm okay with accepting things are bigger than me. And that's all I see spirituality is people have a hang up on the word God. My husband and I say some greater organized design, like just use it as an acronym. There's a greater organized design at play. I don't understand right here, right now, but if I have faith and I trust and I keep putting value out into the marketplace, I'm sure at some point in the future I'll be able to pinpoint this gift. And that's where I bring that aspect in. Now, of course, some people are way on one side
they're
very focused and that's great. I honour their process and others are somewhat in the middle and some are very sceptical and you've got to match and mirror the person that you're in front of. So I work just as successfully with people that don't want to go down that path. I honour their thinking, but from my personal life, I absolutely embrace it because it makes me feel happy.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And having been on the other side of the spiritual component that Kate adds to what she does, it It has phenomenal results in terms of resonating with whatever it is you're dealing with in that moment. It brings another dimension to that whole conversation, which is powerful, I think, anyway. I'm openly saying I believe that there is a force greater than me at play in this world, and I do believe that you need to trust to access that force, and that it's always working for your best. And you might not feel it at the time, because like you, Kate, I've had some pretty horrible things happen. Number one, the recent flooding in Queensland, which completely wiped a whole week out of my calendar and disrupted my thought pattern and my business life and all of those things. But there's a greater reason around that, and it's becoming clear what that might mean to us and our lives, and it's actually not something I was conscious of thinking about until this happened. So sometimes the universe has a way to guide you and move you and mold you that you don't always see. And from my perspective too, I always try and find the good in whatever it is that happens. And the 4 a.m. the morning after the flood, when my husband and I woke up and simultaneously looked at each other and said, we can't do this again. We can't, this is not our forever place. And so it started a whole other conversation about what we were going to do, how we were going to, you know, live our lives, which could have incredibly positive impacts on both of us and family and all the rest of it. The how we do it, I'm figuring that'll come as we go along. Now, back to Coco Matrix, part of what you offer as your part of your services is around a DISC profile. Now, a lot of us know what a DISC profile is, but for the audience that's listening, can you explain? And then let's have a quick talk about the offer you have for the audience.
Yeah, look, when I did my psychology degree, I am the most profiled person on the planet. I love to think that, you know, Freud had his theory and then this Carl Jung shows up in Freud's face and says, that's rubbish, mate. Like, who I am is not dependent on my parents, you know. So I love that whole concept of nature versus nurture. So if you take that into a business context, how you behave at work can be very different to how you behave at home.
Absolutely.
And so what I loved about DISC profiling, I used the work of Marsden. I did target training, and they give you the raw data. So the raw data takes 10 minutes. It shows you how you're acting at work, and then it shows you naturally what is your default position. So we all know that under pressure, we default to our pressure, right? So you can see this in the data. And so I've used this profiling system successfully in recruiting for 25 years. I would never recruit somebody that wasn't aligned naturally to their adapted behavior, because why would I want someone to act psychopathic under pressure? If I like the person, I'm better to go back to them and say, hey, this profile's showing up. There's something going on. Now, in my husband's situation, he was born of, a mother and father who separated, and his stepfather was very different to his stepmother. Mm-hmm. So he has two versions of himself. And this is what we're going to start seeing on the planet. Lots of children going 50-50-50-50. Now, what was acceptable for his stepmother was a very meticulous, very melancholy, very perfectionist person. What was acceptable to his stepfather was a completely opposite person. I met a third version when we met at 21 in London. So for me, when I went and saw him in his natural environments at his mum's and his dad's, he was two different people. And I'm like, well, which one is the real one? So what that brought into our cultural conversations in work is to start looking at why we behave the way we behave. So this offer is $220. I do a full profile debrief with you in terms of, you know, if you could actually let go of that mask and just be naturally who you are and get the thinking around your strengths and just focus on your strengths just for 90 days, I tell you, it is a great place to live. When you can just show up on the planet you know, in exactly who you want
you're supposed to be.
That's the session that I love to do. It is an absolute passion of mine, and I'd love to share that talent with as many people as I can, just to get them just on the right pathway, feeling great.
Yes. Yes, I'm actually pondering, I think it should be mandatory for all politicians and leaders across Australia to have this done. Like, wouldn't that be fascinating, and be interesting?
Yeah. And I'm working in government, and some very high-end leaders have all walked out this week. And it's because really starting to realise that what's the compromise? At what level am I willing to compromise my nature? And if I can't get effective change, and I see the issue in front of me, then I can't withstand the pressure internally. And we all know that empowerment happens inside, right? Does everyone know? It's a change. You've got to come back to center. You've got to come back to your heart, and you've got to do what feels right to you. You know, so we're going to see a big shift in authority, and that's why we make this such an affordable price for the individual, because, you know, so many
of
these.
This is important.
Yeah, this is really, and you know, it gives you three areas to improve on, and I think that's important too. Like, we all have these shadow areas that you know you can be better as a leader. So let's put them on paper, and let's describe, like, if people want to get the best out of you, let's give them the script, let's give them the cheat sheet. So it's a one-page cheat sheet to say, if you're going to work with Kate and you're going to get the best out of me, here is me. And when you meet me, why don't you ask about my new puppy? Like, why don't you, you know, these are things that are important to me. And it just gives them a cheat sheet. And everyone feels happy if you just follow the cheat
sheet. Phenomenal. That's phenomenal.
That's a great easy. So that's the offer. It's a DISC profile, but we give you the raw data. We give you a one-page cheat sheet, and we give you a debrief on and question you as to why do you do that? Why when you're angry do you pretend to be optimistic? Why do you mask anger? Why do you think anger's a bad thing? Why are you judging fear? Why don't you use the fear to drive compliance? Why aren't you utilizing this task-based energy? Why are you judging that? And often it comes from a story, and we can see the story, erase the story, and become the next best version of you.
Fantastic. I did this process 20 years ago, and I can't even remember what it was. And just in open honesty, audience, I'm actually going to jump on Kate's offer and do this as well, because I think it's incredibly important, and I'm passionate about change and being the best version of myself at all times. And so I can't wait to jump on that offer and take advantage of it as well. So, audience, please make sure you jump on the offer. You'll see the link in the comments below, and wherever you're watching this interview with Kate, you will see the link to get your DISC profile done and lead you on a path of living that best life. Kate is extraordinarily good at this. I know from personal experience, but I'm also telling you that she is grounded and has expertise, particularly in these areas of getting the best out of life and leaders and anyone who wants to lead. Go do this. Absolutely. Now, we still have a bit of time, and the other thing that I wanted to discuss is around gender diversity. So, number one, what is Kate's version of gender diversity? Why is it important? And how far do we have to go before we are living in a gender diverse environment?
Look, I think because I grew up with three boys and three girls, so right from the beginning, what I gained from my father was different than I gained from my mother, my brothers, and my sisters. So to me, I've always sorted. You know, my sister would say, I go after trouble. That's how she would describe it.
Yeah.
I think that came from, you know, my brothers, they treated me equal. And right from the beginning, we were running races and doing maths tests and getting grades, and I was comparing my report card to my brother's report card. And, you know, having elder brothers and sisters helps, I think, drive talent, and because they didn't mince their words. You know, if I was a sook, they'd called me out on it, like, stop being a sook. You got to get up. What do you think? The bully's going to come here to the house and hurt you? Like, go back to school and put on a brave face and don't put up with that rubbish. And so I, from a very young age, I sought out solutions to gender problems.
Yeah.
Being a female, I probably wasn't aware of how women suffer in this place that didn't have brothers, right? People that didn't have brothers and hadn't had that resilience training as a young girl where I'd cry and they'd be like, suck it up, princess. Like, you know, this is the reality. And so when I went into those situations, I didn't feel intimidated. I never had that intimidation. I would walk into boardrooms, I'd often be the only woman at the table, and I felt perfectly comfortable because it was just like hanging out with my brother's friends. I didn't have that intimidation. But when I experienced some sexual abuse, that changed everything. I'd never considered my gender as a disadvantage.
Yeah.
And I'd never had, you know, that fear. And that was sort of implanted in me that, oh, I see, like women aren't as strong as men. And I don't mean like resilient. I mean physically women are not as strong. Mm-hmm. And that opened up this whole like, oh, you know, I probably shouldn't put myself in situations where I can be in physical harm. Mm-hmm. And so I see gender diversity isn't just about having a lot of men and women around you. It's having the right men and women around you.
Yes.
And what I've always encouraged is, you know, to have as many age brackets as you can. So, you know, let's put a 12-year-old in a room. In fact, I heard Molly Wright speak, an 8-year-old, if you're looking for inspiration, you know, 8-year-old Molly Wright, you largest participant TED Talk last year.
Yes.
I heard her speak for International Women's Day. I cried from beginning to end. She had me in the palm of her hand. She's 8 years old. And she talked about the importance for showing up. You've got to show up for people. And that's what I think gender diversity is. Women need to show up for other women. And what I mean
they
by
do.
That.
They do.
If a woman's trying to say something, say, hey, Amanda, great, like tell me more about that. Why do you believe so passionate? I don't understand. Like, can I and really collaborate and get each other's back? So does that answer the question? I see diversity in age. I see it in gender. I see it with the non-binary community. Like working in Flight Centre really helped me to see that, you know, some of the guys in Flight Centre were the most incredible multitaskers. But then we could fly to Thailand and they were the best shoppers ever, right? So I without them because they're like, oh, Kate, no, don't wear that. Wear this colour, wear that colour, wear this colour, wear that colour. And I'm like, oh, my God, why would we ever go shopping again without him? So I recognise diversity comes with talent. And so my husband and I have tried really hard to see people soul to soul, not role to role.
Yeah.
And if you shed this layer, I'm a soul, Tony, you're a soul.
Yes.
We happen to have shown up in female attire.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm quite masculine in my leadership style. So, so we've got to define gender and get clarity on what diversity means.
Yeah.
And to me it just means a lot of different, a lot of colours and a lot of socioeconomic and a lot of age groups and a lot of leaning into the conversation.
Yeah, I have to agree with your passion around this subject, Kate, because we actually need diversity across the planet at the moment. We need the diverse conversations that come from a young gay guy. We need conversations from women that have come from that low socioeconomic where life is just full of trauma and hardship. We need those conversations because without them, we can't make change that impacts at that level. And we need that as humanity right now at this time more than anything else. We need that diversity.
Can I share a short story?
Yes, please.
I was asked to work with the Indigenous community, and so there was I was really honoured to all of our empowerment programs. Whenever we bought one, we gifted one. So if there was an Indigenous business leader, we would share those empowerment lessons. And one of the ladies was saying that her business was doing really well, but the her uncle and auntie would come in and strip the business of cash flow.
Oh.
Now, in their culture, you can never disrespect auntie.
Yes.
So she had this unique challenge. Like, I'm Irish descent, yes, and I'm Irish, but that's where I come from. That would never happen in my business. My fathers and uncles would never come in and take money from my business. And so when I was leaning into that conversation and working with those business leaders, I realized this is a much harder conversation for them. You know, we would be inviting them into, you know, standard, and they couldn't, they can't even get past step one, which is how do I keep the money in the business and honor my elders? And that's a violation of values.
Yes.
And
so it's important.
Yeah. And when I started working with Asian one lady, for example, her mother entered where her delivery and distribution dispatch was, and entered another business name and stole her supply chain to cut off her business income, and then went back into the Philippines and slandered her to her own family, saying she was greedy. And so this is like women in business, when we're dealing with really not just the soft skills, but the betrayal.
Yes.
You know, the heartache of you've done everything you can to get this business working, and you're starting to have some success, and we think the people closest to us should support us.
Yeah, but not always.
Not always. And, you know, I had a situation with my school friends. Like, I heard about this Hate Kate Club, and they'd all been part of this Hate Kate Club. And I said, well, for how long? And they said, oh, 10 years. They go through social media. They pick on you. They slander you. They all collude against you. I mean, these are the girls I met at 12 years of age in an all-girls empowered environment.
Wow.
And they started a Hate Kate Club. You know, the interesting process for me, Tony, was to realize I was the president of the Hate Kate Club.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had to realize that, hey, like, my life is not perfect and I haven't done it all brilliantly. But for me, it was starting to really talk about the bullies and the victims and the challenges that people have on their path, and what jealousy and envy will do to people.
Can do. Yes.
And, and open up and share these heartaches, because as we share them, we go, you know what?
Ceases to have power.
Yeah.
Ceases to have power.
Lots of people, whoever your listeners are, you know, I'm sure there's lots of stories, and it's really getting to the point where you don't cry when you tell the story, but you genuinely have
still got to tell it.
Well, you have compassion for yourself.
Yes. That's the difference.
That's what a leader is. It's like, don't think the pathway you're taking is going to be all easy, but don't think it's all has to be that hard too. Yeah. Like, I have new friends now who are in the Love Kate fan group. And
me, I'm a Kate fan. Oh,
thank you. And I choose to be the president of that club, and I've resigned from the other club.
The other.
That's okay. You don't have to spend your time with people who don't celebrate you.
Yeah.
Don't go where people tolerate you would be my number one tip. To leave people with, just stop hanging around people who tolerate you. You can feel it when someone's tolerating you. Just step away. Just tell them, excuse me, I've got to go and I've got other things to do. And just remove yourself from those toxic environments if you can.
Yeah.
Obviously, if it's your husband or wife, that's a different
Kate,
to help people.
I am so sorry to interrupt this fantastic conversation we're having, but we are completely out of time.
Well,
Kate Osborne from Coco Matrix, thank you for sharing the show with me today and empowering and educating us on so many amazing subjects. And that, my friends, is your lot for this week on the Everyday Business Show. Please don't forget to jump onto the site cocomatrix.com/disc and get your profile done today. And we will see you back next week for another Everyday Business Show. Bye for now.
Thanks, Tony.
I want to do it to the best of my ability, because if I fail, that means I fail for my entire female nation, I call it.
Is that possible? That was the question.